Company.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up on the first part of today's program, this month is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and we're going to talk about the causes and what help is available to people who are feeling overwhelmed by the situation they're facing. First, three listener comments about the last few programs, including the programs about open primaries and the Pasco County Sheriff's Department trying to identify who is most likely to commit a crime in the future, and President Trump's environmental record. Here's what three listeners have said.
I want to comment about Donald Trump and as an environmentalist. Last year, he planned to open the Atlantic and Pacific to offshore drilling. He removed the caps on methane released into the atmosphere. Got any coal ash? Just dump it right into the river. That's not a problem anymore. He removed federal lands from protected status in order to open them up for mining and drilling. And when he signed the Great American Outdoors Act, he talked about the towering peaks of he couldn't even pronounce Yosemite. I'm sure Teddy Roosevelt would sure be proud.
This is Catherine from Belgrade. I wanted to thank you for your interesting program yesterday about this, quote, proactive targeting of people who might commit crimes. I wanted to point out that this is a negative feedback loop that starts when kids are in school, that black and brown students are suspended at a higher rate, and they're punishments are much disproportionate compared to what white students suffer. So when the student commits, whether it's a minor infraction or whatever, when he gets a little bit older, then the judge sees this on his record, and then it automatically increases his sentence and the type of punishment. These algorithms are basically garbage in, garbage out, and this also affects not only sentencing but also prison releases. Because when they go to look at the people who are going to be paroled or released early from prison, they look at all these records, and then they use these racist algorithms to then keep them in prison, refuse parole, and, you know, this just keeps going on and on and on.
This is Teresa. I think open primaries are a good idea. The only problem I have is I don't want the Democrats voting in the Republican, and I don't want the Republicans voting in the Democrat primaries. So why don't the independents just have their own primary? You know, we'll have our Democratic primary, Republican primary, and the independents can pick their candidate and then put them, you know, they're on the general election anyway. So why don't they just do that?
Well, those are listener comments that have come in the last 24 hours. This month is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and today, September 10th, is World Suicide Prevention Day. The Crisis Center of Tampa Bay answers local calls to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And in a moment, we're going to talk with Clara Reynolds, who's the president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. NPR reported this morning that teen and youth anxiety and depression are getting worse since the COVID lockdowns began in March, and early studies suggest, and many experts say, they fear a corresponding increase in youth suicide. Let's talk with Clara Reynolds of the Crisis Center of Tampa. Clara, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Good morning, Rob. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be here today.
Well, thank you for coming on. So we've heard a lot of anecdotal talk about the COVID crisis making people more depressed and maybe more susceptible to taking their own lives. What are you seeing at the Crisis Center?
We started tracking calls related to COVID the week of February 29th. And when folks were first calling us, they were very concerned about their physical health and well-being. And that was within the first couple of weeks in March. And then as March and April progressed, folks were calling us really concerned about their economic situation, the economic instability, loss of jobs, concerns about their children's education. And so folks were calling us with these questions and with these needs, but when we really got down to it, as we really started to unpack the calls, what we saw was an increase in depression and anxiety. Since June, we've been really following the number of individuals calling the Suicide Prevention Helpline, looking for help and support, and we've seen a 15% increase in the number of calls to our hotline from June to August, And from this time last year, the same kind of 13-week time frame, that's been a 17% increase. So we know more individuals here in Hillsborough County are calling the Suicide Prevention Helpline because they are contemplating suicide, they have suicidal thoughts, and they are truly struggling to find a sense of normality, find the just things that will give them pleasure and happiness during this pandemic.
A lot of us are really isolated during this crisis. So what advice do you give to people who are feeling depressed about the situation, that they're not out seeing their friends or in some cases can't visit their relatives in nursing homes? What advice do you give people who are feeling down?
We acknowledge the fact that that right now it is the most unusual time in certainly in my lifetime, and that it's okay to not be okay right now. What you're feeling is absolutely normal. There is a sense by the time people are picking up the phone to call that there is that it's either a weakness that they can't feel better, or that they can't seem to get over quote unquote how they're feeling. And so we really want to normalize their feelings and help let them express them. Sometimes what is the most therapeutic isn't necessarily therapy. It is the opportunity just to have somebody unconditionally listen to what you have to say. And so we provide that opportunity for individuals just to talk about what's going on. And then but at the same time, we are doing an assessment to see where they are, if they are contemplating suicide to the point that there needs to be some significant professional intervention. And then we're going to create a plan to live to help them remember that even during COVID-19, what are the things that make you happy, and trying to build a plan to get you back to that state of at least some sort of happiness again, because that becomes the building block. And we also remind folks that we talk a lot about social distancing. It's really not social distancing. It's physical distancing. What can we do so that you can still feel connected to people, but also to keep you physically safe? And so we will brainstorm and problem solve those strategies with individuals who call us looking for help.
Well, today is World Suicide Prevention Day, and we're talking with Clara Reynolds, who's president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa. Clara, as long as we keep talking about the crisis line or the phone line, what is your phone number where people can call if they feel like they really need some help?
There's two simple numbers. 211 is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is available in Tampa, all across the state of Florida, and all across the country. Easy number to remember. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-TALK or 1-800-273-8255. That is also answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We partner with the National Suicide Prevention Helpline and answer those calls that are generated here in Hillsborough County.
So what if I suspect that a family member or a friend is in a serious depression and can't be talked out of it? Maybe the medication isn't working. What are the signs that a friend or a family member may be at the point where they really need some serious help?
Well, first of all, we always tell individuals across our community, if you've got that niggling in your gut that something just isn't right, please listen to it, because your first gut reaction to a person that you know really well, a loved one, is always right. So if you're concerned, you can reach out to 211 or the National Suicide Prevention Helpline and just ask how you can help. But some of the signs that you should be looking for, are psychological signs. If your individual loved one has a history of a diagnosed psychiatric disorder, if there's depression or despair, obsessive thinking, severe mood swings, sometimes there are behavioral symptoms. Prior suicide attempts are always a warning sign that we need to be aware of. Acute loss of energy, change in habits, giving away prized possessions, both insomnia, which we've heard a lot about during COVID-19, or excessive sleep can also be signs and symptoms, withdrawal, those kinds of things. And then there's some situational things to think about. If your friend or loved one has lost somebody recently to death, or has lost somebody due to other health-related issues, certainly if folks have lost their, have lost their job and are expressing issues around anxiety and depression around a job loss that was really impactful for them, and then certainly any major change in their life situation. And then, you know, we talk a little bit about, I was hearing you talk a little bit about youth. I think it's really important to talk about youth because the second leading cause of death for our youth is suicide. And so if you have a youth that's recently been in trouble, has experienced a severe disappointment, severe rejection, those are some things you also want to look out for in addition to some of the other psychological and behavioral signs and symptoms that I talked about.
I was reading up on this beforehand, and I saw also that if somebody goes out and suddenly buys a gun who's never bought a gun before, or they suddenly, you know, start to abuse recreational drugs in a way that they hadn't been doing that before, or they go out and try to get new prescriptions, these are all indicators, too, that something might be wrong for this person and they might need some help.
Absolutely, and I think that what you said specifically around firearms, you know, we are in a state where, you know, certainly we respect anybody's ability to purchase firearms, but like you said, if you've got a friend or loved one who has never expressed an interest in a firearm before and has some of these other signs and symptoms, that should be a warning sign and a concern. And one of the other important pieces that if you recognize any of these signs and symptoms, and again, you've got that niggling in your belly that's telling you something is wrong, one of the most powerful ways of really reaching out to that individual is asking them, are you feeling suicidal? You are not going to plant anything into their head. So that's become an urban myth that if you bring up the word suicide, it's suddenly going to plant this notion. That is an absolute fallacy. But what it will do, it opens that door that you're willing to listen to that individual. Because when they say, yes, I am, I'm so glad somebody recognized it, then you can start taking the steps to say, how can I help you get help? And that's where 211 and the National Suicide Prevention Helpline will work with both of you all to get your friend, loved one to a plan of safety.
And just listening and offering that emotional support to a friend can be very valuable to that friend. What about this notion that if you ask for help, that you're weak, it's a sign of weakness, and that you should be ashamed to show that weakness to somebody else?
Rob, that is one of my biggest pet peeves, to believe that it is that when you have an issue or a disease of the brain that somehow it's a weakness. Let's compare it very simply to high blood pressure. You know, your blood pressure is elevated. You don't wait until you get to a point where you're having a stroke before you address your high blood pressure. None of us do that. We take the precautions. We go and speak to somebody, maybe change our diet, maybe add some medication. It's exactly the same way with behavioral health issues. If we are depressed, if we are anxious, and it is impacting our ability to parent, to be an employer, to interact with our family or our spouse or engage in community-related activities, the best thing you can do is reach out and ask for help. And quite frankly, Rob, because of the stereotypes and the stigma, it's also the hardest thing you can do. But knowing that the most difficult part of the entire process is calling 211, because from there, we can get you to the help, hope, and healing that you need. And so, you know, if nothing else from this conversation, I hope your listening audience takes away that there is no shame. There is no reason why anybody shouldn't reach out for help if they are struggling with behavioral health issues, because help is available and it is absolutely okay and appropriate to reach out and ask for help.
Well, this month is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and today is World Suicide Prevention Day. And our guest is Clara Reynolds, who's president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, and they operate a 24-hour hotline where you can call if you need help. Clara, I was surprised. Every 40 seconds, someone in the world takes their own life, 800,000 people a year. Is it confined to socioeconomic groups or educational groups or ethnic groups? I mean, is there one group that's more susceptible?
You know, suicide is a public health crisis that doesn't care who you are, what your zip code is, you know, what race, ethnicity, sexual orientation you are. It is an equal opportunity, unfortunately, public health crisis that we are in regards to suicide. And, You know, it is certainly there are some populations that are more vulnerable. Our LGBTQ population, particularly our transgender population, is at a higher risk for suicide. But to say that there is one that any group is immune from suicide, I think we can all agree that that's certainly not the case. We have seen celebrities, we have seen friends, family members, all across the board that have died by suicide tragically, and it is the one public health crisis that is 100% preventable, and it is opportunities like World Suicide Prevention Day for us to remind the community that help is available, that no one needs to die by suicide, that it is completely preventable, and there are resources available free of charge 24 hours a day to assist people.
Clara, everything's changed since the COVID crisis and the pandemic, at least for many people. Some people are getting together with their friends. Others are staying away from their friends and trying not to go to the social events that they used to go to, the support groups and religious events and bars and everything else. Some people are staying away from just because they're concerned about their health. What is there a substitute? I mean, is there, you know, I mean, even if you were going to AA meetings in the past, I haven't talked to my friends who are in AA, but I suspect that all those meetings have been ended essentially, or at least they've got to be socially distanced. And but my friends who go to church say everybody's got to isolate when they go to church. But is there a substitute for that human interaction that we used to enjoy back in the good old days in January?
January, right? So, you know, in regards to NA and AA meetings, those are certainly happening via Zoom. I know that all of the behavioral health providers across the state of Florida, none of them have shut their doors. We have all transitioned to teletherapy, group therapy via utilizing telehealth. So that has really opened a door in the behavioral health world that really had only ever been like maybe a little bit cracked, Rob, to be honest with you. We have determined that that those of us in the behavioral health field can do amazing work with individuals utilizing telehealth. So if anybody in your listening audience has been involved in NA, AA, or any other type of group help situation, most of them have transitioned to a Zoom or a Teams, more of a remote video type of environment. For those of us, though, that are more extroverted and really look forward to having those social interactions, we know those have been difficult. So when individuals call us at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, we really talk about, okay, what can we do? How can we facilitate some of those interactions? And folks have gotten incredibly creative. We've certainly seen that on social media, you know, having lawn chair therapy sessions or lawn chair discussions where you're 6 feet apart, you're wearing a mask, you know, opportunities to, you know, again, utilizing social media, you know, all of the various platforms, you know, Zoom, Teams, Skype, whatever it is. I think one of the most important pieces, though, out of this, Rob, is for your listening audience, don't wait for somebody else to reach out to you. If you want that interaction, take the initiative and reach out to somebody that you know and somebody that you love, either by phone or one of these social media platforms, because more than likely, they're struggling as well, and for whatever reason, they're not picking up the phone or engaging in that conversation. So be that change. Be that person that reaches out to your friends. Don't wait for your friends to come to you. We have seen that has been incredibly successful because, again, due to stigma, due to stereotyping, people don't feel like they can reach out for help just because, you know, or reach out to a friend when they're not feeling so good because, you know, there's, again, all sorts of reasons and issues. So be the one to reach out to your friends and family, particularly if you're feeling lonely or isolated.
Clara, let me ask you one more question about myths, and that is that sometimes, you know, I can remember going through high school and I had a lot of friends and several of them were depressed. I'm sorry I'm laughing about it now. They all made it through, luckily. I think the adults took it as, well, this person's just trying to get attention. And the adults didn't take it that seriously. We as teenagers who knew our friends better, we were worried, and luckily everybody made it through. But what is saying that you're threatening to commit suicide. Is that an attention-getting device, or is that something that we should take much more seriously?
Yeah, and, you know, Robin, I appreciate the phrase that you use. We utilize die by suicide. You don't commit, you know, cancer. You die by cancer. So in death by suicide, what we say is that if that is an absolute myth. Oh, they're just looking for attention. Okay, I think it's very appropriate to give them that attention. Ask those questions. Make sure that you're checking in and reaching out. In today's world, and I have a teenager who is a senior at Hillsborough High School, so I actually see this in action. The stress and the anxiety and the pressure that are on our youth today is nothing like you and I ever experienced when we were teens and in, you know, middle and high school. So I think it's very, very important for parents, for teachers, for sports coaches, that when you see a student, an athlete, a teen, a young adult who is struggling, please don't say, you know what, suck it up, buttercup, or minimize the feeling of, no, you're not suicidal, you're fine. Wait a minute, validate those feelings. And I think that as we are continuing to have these discussions, whatever I feel is real to me at the time, and what if I'm expressing those feelings, I'm looking for somebody to say, it sounds like it's very tough for you right now. Validating those feelings, whether that parent agrees with it or not, or the coach agrees with it or not, it's an opportunity to validate those feelings, and that gives license for that youth to continue talking so that you can get to the root of what's going on. And that's really what is so powerful and what is so very, very important in our conversations that we're having with our teens and our young adults. Don't tell them you don't feel that way. Don't tell them their feelings aren't real, or, you know, wait till you get older, or any of that kind of garbage. Be with them in that moment and provide that help and support, validate those feelings, and really help them be able to process those feelings. And if it turns out that that individual is seriously contemplating suicide, please don't wait. Call 211, call the National Suicide Prevention Helpline, 1-800-273-TALK, and get that individual the help that they need.
A couple of days ago, a woman who was tangentially connected to WMNF and connected to a lot of people here in the Tampa Bay area took her own life. And
very sorry.
It was posted on Facebook, and I was reading the tributes to this person who was a great person, and everybody said, oh, I wish I had known. I wish I had known that she was feeling this way, because I would have given her any help at all. And I think for the survivors, there's a feeling of helplessness and a wish that they had recognized the issue earlier. What are you saying? How do we recognize it? If and we've talked a lot about that during this interview, but this happened suddenly to this woman, and on Facebook, there's 5 or 6 major tributes that have hundreds of comments about people just so sad and disappointed that she's gone.
I'm so sorry for the loss that that your listening audience has experienced, because there is nothing worse than losing a loved one to suicide. And that, I think, you know, the term survivor guilt, I think, is real of, you know, did I not do something right? When it comes to those suicides, it's very hard to know what was the impetus for that suicide to happen. Was this something that had been long thought of and planned out? Was this an impulsive suicide? It's oftentimes hard to know without really, you know, digging in. And there are folks that are able to do those kinds of suicidal, those kind of suicidal processes. But you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, all of us have responsibilities to each other, of course. And again, the best that we can do is notice that if we are struggling, if we recognize that we're struggling, or we have a loved one or a family member who's struggling, the most important thing we can do is reach out and ask for help, or ask for help, or ask them if they're suicidal and if that if some help can be provided to them.
So that 211 line is not just for people who are feeling depressed, but it's also going to give some coaching to people who may have friends or family members who are depressed?
Correct. 211 is an information and referral line, but it is also a lifeline for many individuals. Individuals will call us, call 211, maybe looking for rent assistance. They may be looking for food assistance. And we spend time. We average in a normal pre-COVID about 7 to 9 minutes with every caller. In COVID, we're averaging 15 to 20 minutes with each caller to really get to the root causes or what's going on. So again, 211 is available to anybody in our community, and you can call for any variety of reasons. You know, at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, we say that a crisis is just a life's problem that needs a solution, and we want to help you figure out what those solutions are. So again, if you're out there in the listening audience and you don't know how to have these conversations, you're afraid to have the conversations, you don't know if you've got the emotional capacity to handle having a conversation like that, call us at 211. We'll role play it with you. We're going to give you the language that you need and also help you develop strategies so that, you know, if you're in that situation, how you can take care of yourself as well as taking care of your friend or family member who's struggling.
Clara, thanks for all the good information. Is there anything else I should have asked you or anything else you'd like to point out?
You know, the mission of the Crisis Center is to ensure no one in our community has to face crisis alone. We do a lot more than just answer the 211 and the Suicide Prevention Helpline. So if anybody in your listening audience wants to learn more about what we do, please go to our website, crisiscenter.com. You will learn about our Rape Crisis Center, our trauma counseling, as well as our 911 ambulance work. So, you know, please thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today, and particularly on World Suicide Prevention Day.
Clara Reynolds, thanks a lot. Thanks for the work that you do. Great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Rob. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Clara. Good to talk
Bye-bye.
To you. Well, that's Clara Reynolds, who's president and CEO of the Crisis Center of Tampa, a nonprofit right here in the Tampa Bay area. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And we'll talk about this, or we could talk about some issues in the news. Certainly, I'm not a social worker, but I think Clara had some great advice for us about where to turn. And if you want to talk about something that's in the news, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Robin Hudson, who's been waiting for a while. He called in early, and he wants to talk about talking to supporters of President Trump. So, Robin Hudson, what would you like to talk about?
Wow, it's amazing that I dovetail into that conversation earlier. I know you're not a social worker, Rob, but you do exchange and have verbal exchanges with Trump supporters very effectively. And you don't get excited, and you seem very calm. And to be honest with you, sir, I don't know how to express it. I don't see Trump as normal. Like, this is not normal. This is not like a discussion on tax policy or this man is amoral, and his supporters have to be amoral. And I can't effectively commune. And unfortunately, I live in a community that supports him. And Rob, I just don't get it. I don't.
Well, yeah, I mean, my attitude towards it right now is that we all should be calm. And so that's why I drink Jack Daniels every morning before I come to work.
It sounds like sage advice.
No, I'm just kidding. Of course, and I should have said that after the interview with Clara. But
it's medicinal at this point.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Ross Perot had that line, is that we're all humans on this planet, and we're not going anywhere, so we got to learn to get along. I think at this point, you know, we need to listen to other people. I hope they listen to us, and we need to exchange ideas. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. But as a kid, I was always into history, and I used to watch a lot of History Channel. And I would see films of Hitler. And listen, I'm not saying Trump is Hitler. I'm not. But the point is, these people supported him. They elected him. He wasn't, and there were doctors, physicians, engineers, intelligent people that went along with it. And Rob, I see the same.
Well, thing. Rob, I'm with you. I've been reading. I think on my bookshelf, the last three or four books I've read were about the rise of fascism. So
right.
I'm reading Ann Applebaum's book right now.
My question is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, how do you have calm, rational dialogue with these people?
You know, I was just at a conversation like that where the son of a Cuban immigrant who had fled Castro, he was part of a wealthy family who fled Castro, was talking with his mom, who was not Cuban. His dad had married a woman outside the Cuban community, and they were talking about Trump and the Democrats, and the son, who believes his dad, was saying that all the Democrats are socialists and they're going to come and take our property. I mean, they'd come over here with some money and they made more money here, and so it's a pretty wealthy family. And they went at it. They were just, they went at it. I was sitting there trying to be a fly on the wall during the conversation, and they were angry. This is a mother and a son, very angry. The same divide that we see all over the country. In the end, they hugged, but I don't think they agreed on anything. I don't know what to do. I mean, I think we have to... People that are worried about the rise of fascism have to use facts. Here on MNF, within the last 24 hours, I've heard people calling people names. I don't ever agree with that. You know, you may feel like Trump's a fascist, and I understand that feeling, having read a bunch of history books, over the last 65 years or 55 years that I've been reading books, and then reading the books about the rise of Hitler, and there's some great books out there.
Did you ever think fascism would rise here while you read those books?
Not when I was a kid, no. I mean, I kind of thought it was dead. I thought it was in the closet, rise again. And I'm surprised. I think, you know, one of the things to me is that all the World War II veterans are dead or almost dead. They fought against fascism. They know what it was. And all the people that fought, one other thing, Robin, I want to let you go. I've been watching TCM movies about the rise of fascism. And if you look at the 30s and 40s movies that they were making in Hollywood warning people about the rise in fascism, you hear echoes
Absolutely.
Of the Trump people today. And that I know the Trump people who we have a lot of them listening. They're going to say, oh, no, that's not me. I'll recommend a bunch of movies in which people are saying the same thing that Trump said, who are defenders of Hitler, in those movies in the 30s and 40s, and it is scary.
Yeah. Rob, in the beginning, like in 2016, I would have cut him some slack as Trump supporters. You know, you wanted change, you were sick of Washington as it is, you thought this guy would be the catalyst of change, so you figured you'd give him a shot. Well, now, sir, it's 4 years later, and we know what we have. So if you still support him, Hillary Clinton was right. You are deplorables. And I know you don't
but I think name-calling alienates people. And they have a right to believe what they want. I think it's when they start breaking the law, violating the law, ignoring the law, then I think we got to put our foot down.
All right.
Rob, thanks a lot. Thanks. Okay, I hope I didn't detract. There's probably a lot that you want to talk about. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Grant in Tampa. Grant, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, Rod, Grant here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, man, so we spoke a few weeks ago. I was one of the 7 muralists arrested for the Rainbow Mural.
Right.
Our charges have been dropped. That's good. But yeah, I'm calling about the activism side that we're doing. So you got to be on the streets to make them listen, and then also doing the activist work. So actually, as we speak, there's a special city council meeting going on here in Tampa. I'm trying to get funding for a Kahoot-style program out of Eugene, Oregon. They've been doing it 30 years. So this is where like 20% of calls are responded to with social workers and EMTs. and they only need police backup about 1% of the time. So very related to crisis center would be really useful in doing that kind of work. And I guess I just want to encourage folks who are interested in that to join us at city council meetings and get involved on the activism side.
And Grant, is it on the agenda for today's Tampa City Council meeting?
So it's actually, they did a special meeting for today because we got them talking about it more. And one of the council members, Dingfelder, made a motion last week to fund it with $1 million out of their $1.3 billion budget. But the council members couldn't agree to that small sum. So we're talking about it more today, trying to get a pilot program off the ground. But yeah, we, as with any policy to benefit the public, we need to push our politicians to make it happen.
All right. And Grant, what time are you going to be there? What time is key to be at the Tampa City Council meeting today?
So it's happening right now. I'm actually might be called on to speak soon. But yeah, I'm saying for future meetings, folks want to get involved. And then quick shout out. So on Instagram, there's Tampa Bay Activist Network. And if you don't have Instagram, you can email us at TampaBayActivistNetwork@gmail.com. And we'd love more folks to get involved.
All right, good. Well, keep us apprised. Let us know. And I'm going to have Councilman Goods on my TV program on Friday night, so I'll ask him about this.
Okay, what time is that? I'll have to tune in.
8:30 on WEDU TV.
Heck yeah.
All right.
Thank you for all the work you do, Rod.
Thanks, Grant. All right, good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Andrew in Hardy County. Andrew, thank you for calling in. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. So briefly on the whole name-calling thing, you know, you're absolutely right about that. And I've watched this for generations now. And we don't accomplish anything by adding to the polarization. In fact, as the adults in the room, it is largely our responsibility not to do that and provide an example of an alternative to that. Because starting dialogue and keeping dialogue going is the only way that we will ever accomplish anything. And the only way we establish any trust is by showing people respect. But on to the original topic. And that was a fantastic interview. This has just happened. This is like 12 days ago now, 10 days ago. I was driving northbound on US 17, coming to the rail overpass at close to the 60 intersection in Bartow. And as I came up the slope, I saw this young man with one leg up against the concrete of the overpass sidewall, gripping the railing above it. And I got to the bottom of the slope, just did a U-turn and came back up. As I got close to him, I said, "Are you doing okay?"
What, this guy was hanging over the rail about to jump?
Well, no, he wasn't hanging over it. He was like, there's a continuous metal rail that sits up above the concrete that's the side barrier, the raised barrier, the sidewall effect, in effect, to the area. But yeah, I mean, his intent was obvious. He had one foot up on the concrete, and his hands were on the rail where he's getting ready to lift himself up and go over. And so, you know, as I said, you know, as I came back up the slope and I said, are you okay? And he just shook his head. So I just pulled up into the center median, which fortunately the air is wide, and started walking over to him and just started talking to him. And that springs from experiences that I had like 52 years ago, when a young friend of mine, when I was 18, did commit suicide in the most horrible circumstances. He's a very gifted young musician. He had just come into the small circle of people that I was a part of. And, you know, high school students in Greensboro, North Carolina, high school seniors, he was a junior. And had to go through the fact that my friends and I, we were quote-unquote kids at that point, were his only contact, and spent the last night of his life trying to get him to give something else a chance, just one more chance And he went to school that next day and downed a cyanide concoction that he had already prepared for himself a long time before. And, of course, within about 8 hours, he was gone. But the most horrible part of this, and the thing that I reflect on, and I've never lost this, was that at his funeral a few days later, most of his family members, obviously, were just broken. They were just absolutely heartsick. His father, notably, was experiencing two emotions, and those emotions were embarrassment and rage. His son had insulted and humiliated himself by leaving this life. So you can imagine what kind of man. These were not poor people, okay? This is a wealthy household in Greensboro, North Carolina. And this guy was a talented kid who had everything to live for. But he might as well have been in a concentration camp for the emotional environment that he was in. And it was very clear why that was the case at his funeral, which is absolutely just devastating.
Well, Andrew,
and the last little piece of that, and I don't want to run long, I'm sorry, but when the police arrived in Bartow, as of course they did in force, one of the first three officers there was a guy in a SWAT rig getting out of a canine vehicle, and
who scared the heck out of this kid who's on the bridge.
By then, I was absolutely in a rush because he was saying, "Please don't come close to me. Please don't come close to me."
Right.
He still had his hand on the lift bar on the overpass, and I was just looking at him and saying, "Look, let's just keep talking and see what we can do." So yeah, get him.
Is the kid okay? Is the kid okay?
No. Yeah. I gave them information, including my phone number, for him to get back to him if he wanted to. He's probably in a psych lockdown somewhere.
Yeah. All right. Andrew, thank you. Thank you for your stories. Thank you.
Obviously, the police were not what we needed. What we needed at that point in time was a social worker. One of the officers responded, "Well, I see this as social work."
I'm sure he's trained in how to social work. All right. Andrew, I got to go. Andrew, thanks. We got every line lit. 813-239-9663. That topic did come up the other day, too, when we were talking with the reporter at the Tampa Bay Times who did the story about Pasco County and police looking for future criminals. And several of the people that the police were looking at were autistic. And, they behave slightly differently. So I wonder how well police are trained in dealing with autistic people. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, Rob. What a great show you've got going on today. I think that what Grant was talking about directly relates to that last caller's issue.
Yeah, right.
I definitely would support anything that guy's going to try to get going there on that front. But, the other thing, I appreciated the first caller, but I really hope that in the future we can try to not use names like deplorable. I think that does not do anything to push forward the message that we're trying to bring the country together. I mean, that's just my take. I appreciate everything else that he said, but I really don't think that helps anything. But because I think a lot of people are humiliated when they're economically disadvantaged and they don't even need to be told that makes them deplorable. But anyway, on to the most important thing I got for you today is also related to the first lady talking about the suicides. How many people didn't actually commit suicide but died because they drank themselves to death or did opiates? And they're not actually, I don't think they can count those people as suicides, right? Well, I mean, I don't personally know anybody that has ever committed suicide, but I know several people that have died, whether it's from alcoholism or from...
me too. I know people like that.
And so my point is that I read this article today about where we are as a nation compared to the rest of the world as far as our standard of living, and it just shocked me that of 163 nations worldwide, only the United States, Brazil, and Hungary are the ones in which the people are more worse off than they were 10 years ago. And I actually think that that plays into a lot of what's going on. Now, I mean, I know there's rich people that kill themselves and all that, but that's not what I'm getting at, how many people don't commit suicide but are going to have, and I could be included because I'm drinking too much too, but what I'm saying is, you know, that our standard of living has been going down for a while, and that's not something that's on both parties, okay?
Yeah, that's true. Kevin, thanks a lot. That's a topic we talk a lot about here on MNF too,
as you know.
Let's go to Karen in Dunedin. Karen, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, first, I just have to say your comment about the Jack Daniels just made me spit water out of my mouth.
Well, I hope it made you laugh. And
it definitely did.
Good. That's so what I wanted.
I have lost several people to suicide. My ex-husband, not while we were together, but, and I was in college at the time, and I actually did a report on it. And another, just, I found this very interesting, is if someone starts giving stuff away, that's an indication too.
Yeah, Clara mentioned that. Yeah, if they start drinking, if they buy a gun suddenly, there's a whole list. There's lists out there that people can look up. They sleep too much. They start to behave recklessly, such as driving while intoxicated or without wearing a seatbelt. They express rage or appear agitated or talk about seeking revenge. I mean, there's a whole list of things. Yeah.
Well, you know, currently with the whole gun thing, because I have to say I know people that are purchasing guns now, but it's not for suicide. It's more because of the unrest in the country, and they feel that they don't want to be on the one of the ones not owning one, you know what I mean? Whereas me, I'm not going to ever own one because I'd probably end up hurting myself accidentally. So, but anyway, thank you for your show.
Thank you, Karen. I'm sorry to hear about your ex-husband. I'm very sorry. Thank you. 813-239-9663. The emails are piling up. We have about 20 emails. Roger writes this: your guest is right. Some groups, such as AA, have transitioned to Zoom. Some have closed, but many are still open. Open groups are monitored for CDC guidelines, and some are occasionally shut down for not following the rules, writes Roger in Clearwater. And then Doug writes this: everybody needs to seek life, but would we be better if the election was tomorrow or in 2 months? Can't wait to see what some leaders will be tomorrow. That's part of Doug's email. Doug, thank you for that. And then Ruben writes this: I watched a documentary yesterday, The Social Dilemma. It's an eye-opening look into the way social media is designed to create addiction and manipulate our behavior, told by some of the very people who designed the systems at Facebook, Google, and Twitter. The piece that shocked me was the most about the higher suicide rates in young people. As a father of two preteens, I'm very afraid of what's coming. Yeah, social media is designed to addict. Our cell phones are designed to addict us. There have been some good interviews on the program Fresh Air about that. And there's a lot of good reading about that, too. Dave's in Massachusetts. He says, in answer to the puzzle of how there can continue to be people who support President Trump, I blame Fox News and right-wing radio. Those people are deeply misinformed and believe anything and everything that Fox tells them, writes Dave, who's in Hudson, Massachusetts. Tony writes this: where is the outrage? Almost 200,000 Americans have died largely because President Trump lied and purposely hid the truth, which he knew late in January. Every one of us should let any Trump supporters know how we feel about the most vile behavior of any American president. Woodward is, or at least was, a Republican, and unfortunately his reporting rings so true that we have Trump's confession on tape. No politeness, we have a country to save, writes Tony in St. Pete. Let's go back to the phones. I've got a bunch more emails to read. I'll try to get to them. Let's go to Eddie in Tampa, who's been waiting for almost 15 minutes. Eddie, thank you for your patience.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like
to
say?
I was going to talk about the university, but there's something about suicide I want to mention. And that is, I used to be security guard, and I followed the Art Bell program all the time.
The what program?
Art Bell.
Oh, Art Bell, the conspiracy guy overnight, yeah.
Yeah, I would bet you any amount of money he committed suicide, and they're covering it up. And there are three reasons why I believe that. The first reason is he died on Friday the 13th, and Art Bell was obsessed with things that are paranormal. The second reason is, first they said he died from COPD, and that was a lot of nonsense. Then they said it's some drug thing that, the whole thing is unbelievable.
All right, Eddie, thank you. Thank you for your phone call. I don't think we're going to solve Art Bell's death right here, but let's go to Nate, who's in Tampa. Nate, you're on M&F. What's up?
I go back to a call you had a while back when a guy said you'd ever have a conversation with Trump supporters, and you was like, yeah, you know, you try to talk to everybody. My grandfather used to tell me, have complex conversations with people who are not like you. And so, like you, that's how I live my life. The interesting thing that I found with Trump supporters, even my mother-in-law is a Trump supporter, is that reason is out the window. And I think that's where I get lost trying to have middle ground with them. This latest thing for me is just, you know, another notch that he has taken every Republican talking point over the last 30 years and basically stomped on it. And it's crazy to me because I spent 30 years as a Democrat. I switched to Republican Party 10 years ago. And I switched because I started to move a little bit with, like, abortion and, you know, looking at my babies. I started a small business. I wanted lower tax, all that stuff. And now I realize it's like, I can't vote for that man. There's no way in the world I can go into a booth and say, as a Christian man, a father and a husband, a brother and a son, that I can vote for that guy.
But Nate, don't you think that he's appointed judges who are anti-abortion and he's given tax breaks to a big business and some of that has helped some small businesses, not every small business, but could you say that the values that you want you're getting from President Trump?
The problem is my grandparents, because I didn't have a dad growing up. My mom and my grandparents told me always be aware of the low hanging fruit. So while you're appointing people that might be anti-abortion, what about all the rest of the stuff? I don't want to be a one-issue voter. I cannot. I think people died and gave themselves up for this country for me to go into a booth and say I'm a one-issue voter. So while you might be appointing those judges that might be against abortion, but they're also for private prison. So how does that balance itself out? Do you see what I'm saying? So I don't know. I can't do it. I don't like Joe Biden. I don't like Kamala Harris. But I'm going to vote for them, and I have talked my family into doing it because I just can't vote for this guy. This man is one of the most. I'm losing words now. You guys are calling. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, Nate. Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you, Nate. Good to hear from you. Let's see if I'm going to read these emails, but I'm going to cut out the ones that are unsigned. And you can't call yourself some guy either. All right, let me just. A note to the wise. Brian writes this, I wonder what the Cuban supporters of this president feel about the Cuban dissident who's languishing in Mexico, diagnosed with a cancerous tumor and needing medical attention, who is being denied entrance into the U.S. because of this president's policies. He requested asylum and was told by Customs and Border Patrol to return to Guatemala or Honduras and request asylum there. This poor man left Cuba and went to Mexico to try to get into the U.S., and he can't because of President Trump. How can the majority of Cubans vote for Trump? Yeah, the stories out this week show that the Cuban-American vote, at least the older people, are trending towards President Trump right now. I think there was another story about a Trump aide, I think it was Steve Bannon, going to Cuba to try to negotiate something on behalf of the president. I'll have to look up that story and read it to you. Simon writes, Trump is not a fascist. He does not want to dismantle democracy, government. He says, stop listening to Jason Stanley and Democracy Now! If you want to borrow any of these authors. And he says John Diggins is a good author to read. The reason why I think President Trump leans towards fascism is that he's encouraging people to go out with their guns and intimidate people around the country. He's ignored laws. He thinks he's above the law on a variety of cases over and over again. He's written all these executive orders that give him an enormous amount of power. He's one of these people that believe in a unitary government. that say that the president has almost supreme power, and he's hired people like William Barr who also believe that. I mean, there's case after case where if you're looking to make the case that this guy's a fascist, and look who supports him. I mean, if you look around the country, it's the KKK, it's the neo-Nazis, it's the Proud Boys, who are just another modern fascist group, if you can use modern and fascist in the same word. I mean, there's evidence all over the place. So, Simon, you're wrong, as you always are, whenever you email or call WMNF. You're never right. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned, because coming up next, you're going to hear the Surly Feminists. They're going to be here doing their great midpoint program. And thanks to Bill Grace, he came in despite having a huge emergency at home. Bill, thank you for your dedication. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.